Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Klum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 289. And I am thrilled to have on the post guru from California, Mr. Brandon Henderson, a friend of mine that I met at Snow Valley Basketball School. I've had the privilege, he probably doesn't remember this, but I think this was the second or third year I was assigned to his post player clinic at Snow Valley. And we've gotten to know each other over the last few years. So excited to have Coach on the podcast here tonight. And before we get to Coach, we are going to, of course, thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice at CosacChiro.com, CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coach tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be, first of all, subscribe. Second of all, give us a five-star review. Third of all, write a five-star review. Do all of those things so that we can move up in the standings. Tell your friends about A Pen and a Napkin. When folks look up Coaching Basketball Podcast, we'll move up in the rankings, make it easier for us to for folks to find us. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of that stuff. Mr. Brandon Henderson, you get the privilege, as we just talked about a few minutes ago, you get the privilege to have the first podcast recorded on the new computer for A Pen and a Napkin. How does that feel, Brandon?
It's a complete honor to be the first one on your computer. I knew that you wanted to wait for this occasion for just the post moment, because the post game has been forgotten. So it's an honor.
Oh, well, it's great to have you on. It's going to be a great conversation that we're going to have here over the next hour or so. It should be some really good stuff here. Again, thanks so much for the kind words about The Last of the Cowboys that you put on social media. That was really, really appreciated, man.
No, I thought you did a great job. Anyone that wants to know, honestly, the story of how camps are created or the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, I thought you did a great job in connecting dots on how it is great for the players that go there and how it's special for them, a coaching standpoint. So easy read, but you did a phenomenal job. You just did a great job.
Well, it's been a while since Marty Plum and Phenomenal have been in the same sentence, Brandon. So I appreciate
it. It was meant for your new computer.
I'm gonna keep this computer for a while if people keep saying Phenomenal. So, but no, it's greatly appreciated. I very humbly appreciate all of those kind words and sentiments here. So. Enough about that. Let's jump into the real reason why we're here, Brandon, and that is you. Let's dive into it here. I know you've listened to these before. Let's just dive right into it. Tell us a little bit about your basketball journey. Tell us about your basketball background and how you've navigated the waters of this beautiful game throughout your life here. That's gotten you to Riverside Prep.
I am a son of two parents that own a restaurant in Big Bear, California. I grew up, it's probably 2 hours east of LA. It's in Southern California mountains. From parents that love sports, and they just put me into sports at a young age, and I didn't really have a choice. I never had free time. So it was football, and when football ended, it was basketball, and when basketball ended, it was baseball. And sadly for my parents, me and my brothers and sisters were all really good, so we were always on the all-star team. So there was never really a break. Our trips were really going to whatever the all-star team was. So, But played basketball at Big Bear High until my sophomore year. And then my parents decided to move down to a city called Apple Valley, California. And I finished my last 2 years of high school at Grand Hills High School. Mm-hmm. I did really well there. Had opportunity to play at Cal Poly Pomona out of high school, but I mean, it's probably a lot of people don't know this because I have a learning disability, so I didn't take the right classes in high school, so I couldn't go to a 4-year school. Mm-hmm. So I went to a JUCO, and I went to Victor Valley College. And then after 2 years there, I got a full ride scholarship to Vanguard University of Southern Cal, which is an NAIA school. Played for the great Fred Lissenberger, one of the craziest little guys that made me feel like I was 5'2 and I'm 6'8. So, and then when I finished my playing career, luckily for me, my JC coach wanted me to come back and be a coach. So I started my first 6 years of coaching as an assistant at Victor Valley College under him. And then he had a situation where he had to step down. And the following year, I got my first head coaching opportunity at Sultana High School, which is probably 20 minutes from Apple Valley, where I lived or grew up. And then I went from there to Victor Valley High School. Uh-huh. And then I got the opportunity to go to Life Pacific University, which was honestly one of the hardest decisions. And I can explain that later if you want, why that was a really hard decision for me to make.
Now or later, doesn't matter, man. It's your night, so let it rip.
Well, like, well, I'm from Sultana. So Sultana High School, it's my first time being a head coach. And you learn that sometimes you at a young age make decisions because you're like, oh, I want to be a head coach. And you don't really research a job as good as you should. And I probably took a bad job at Sultana. My first year, I had the principal's son on my team. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was told I have to have the principal's grandpa as my assistant coach. But I'm like so excited to be a head coach. I'm like, no problem, I'll do it.
You're just kind of blinded by the opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was 2 years of struggle for me. I learned a lot through it, to be honest, to not just take a job because you want to be a head coach. But then I had a great opportunity at Victor Valley High School with a Snow Valley coach from California that was retiring to take over his program. So that's why I went to Victor Valley High School. The coach's name was Matt Denny. And I got to be assistant under him for a year before I took over for 2 years. Oh. And the hard part was the 2 years I took over, I kind of gutted the senior class because they were kind of kids that just didn't have the character that I like. Mm-hmm. So I went really young. And we struggled my first year at Victor. And then my second year, we started turning the corner. And I knew that my third and fourth year, where they would become senior, we would be really good. And that's when I got offered the assistant job at Life Pacific University in San Luis. And I knew I was leaving the job where I've created it how I wanted it, and that I was going to be really successful. One, because I had really good players, but two, it was really cool to see the program take your
personality.
Yeah, your personality.
Yep.
Which takes a lot of time to do that. So, but I went to Life Pacific. It's an hour away from where I live. I loved it. It was a 4-year program. NAI played in the GSAC where I played at Vanguard. Enjoyed every minute of it. I was around a coach named Coach Cook, who's a really good offensive coach. So I got to learn, pick his brain there. And the cool part is I got to kind of be around and mentor the lead assistant, who was only 22 years old at the time. So that part was cool because I was a lot older than he was as a second assistant. And then COVID hit. And you're a small Christian school. They're like, hey, we can pay the head coaches this. we gotta let the other people go. We can't afford them. And you know, I understood. I didn't have a problem with it. And I looked at it as an opportunity for me to get back to being a father for a year or two, and being a good husband to my wife. And then that led to me just being a teacher for honestly 2 years. And Victor Valley High School got a new principal, and they needed a girls' basketball coach. And he kept walking around on the campus, going, "Hey, who can I get to run this program? Like, does anybody know of anybody?" And they all kept going, "You got the best coach on campus. He's right down there. You go talk to him." And he kept coming into my room, and I kept turning him down. I just really was enjoying being a dad and. Mm-hmm. Being a husband and all that, and
definitely can relate to that. Yep.
I like look back at when I was at Sultana and my first time at Victor. Like honestly, I was the type of coach, like I'd be there at the JV and freshman practices and like coaching them and getting home at like 10:30 at night every night. And I wasn't balancing coaching and being a family guy.
Sure. Yeah.
So once COVID hit, that gave me a perspective of being a family guy first. But the principal just kept talking, like, what do you want? What do we got to do? And it just kind of led to me finally jumping back in. I believe that was in 2022, and taking over the girls' basketball program. And it was a program that was really gutted. Hadn't been good in a while. Just not a lot of league championships. The coach before me had a different approach than I was going to try to do. He kind of coached by fear.
Yeah.
So I had to shift the players' mindsets a lot, and it took a while. And then to last year, some situations came up with, the athletic director and me not seeing eye to eye. And I got the opportunity to go to Riverside Prep, and I just got an opportunity to be in a really good school. And I'm really looking forward to turning that for the moms.
Yeah. The newest category to the A Pen and a Napkin podcast, Brandon, the Karen Self, A Pen and a Napkin moment. When do you recall the first time grabbing a writing utensil and putting pen to paper or pencil to napkin or whatever it was and start drawing out those pesky X's and O's?
You know, okay, so that's kind of a cool question. I had a really good high school coach that became my JC coach, Tom Dudgeon. And he always had that in his pockets all the time. He could just be doodling. and he was like my father away from home.
Uh-huh.
Like a great mentor. He's a big reason why I went to Snow Valley Basketball School in California. But I would say my senior year, I would start asking him questions, and then I would start doodling to be like him. And looking back, probably those plays were like probably maybe the dumbest plays ever created, maybe like.
But you got to start somewhere, though.
Yeah. But to look back, it was honestly me trying to be him. A great mentor of mine, a guy that I still look up to this day. A phenomenal teacher of the game. So I would say my senior year in high school, I knew I wanted to be a coach. That's what I knew that honestly as a sophomore in high school, I just really enjoyed coaching. Coach Dudgeon actually, it's funny. When I went to JUCO, some JUCOs don't have the most resources, so he didn't have like all the money for a lot of assistants.
Yeah,
and he hadn't taught me post moves for all my years in high school, and when I got to JUCO, I'm a player, and we do this like breakdown, like 10 minutes guards on this side, 10 minutes post players on that side. And he goes to me, I know you're a player, but you're running the drills over there and coaching, ready, go. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like even a freshman and sophomore and at a JUCO, I was already starting to coach and stuff. So, you know, that was cool. And having Coach Dudgeon trust me,
yeah,
and bring me back to, I think that's kind of why he brought me back, is he saw how I did in that situation. So, senior year.
Yeah,
I would say is the first time I did doing that.
Yeah, there you go. You talked about, you know, you've had quite a few stops along your basketball journey. Most of them good, a couple of them you wish it would have turned out a little bit differently, which is the same for most of us. What have been kind of some of the really good things that have come out of having those multiple stops along the way, Coach? And what are some things, what's maybe one or two things that, you know, not so good as far as your overall development as a coach?
I'll start with the good. The good was, honestly, I looked back at Sultana. I didn't do a good job. I don't think the administration did a good job. But it helped me understanding that this idea as head coach is like, well, it's my way or the highway, and they're not going to tell me what to do. Like, I learned really quickly that your principal has a say, like, in what you do. And it's really important that you pick the right principal to work for.
Yeah.
And my younger years at Sultana, like, I didn't even think of that. I'm like, this is my program. He's not going to tell me what to do, because I was young and delusional. I think understanding, and I heard this from Coach Showalter later on, he's like, sometimes it's good to, in an interview, not answer the questions how they want to answer. You better answer how you are, so that if they pick you, they know that who they're getting.
Exactly.
And I look back at when I interviewed for Sultana, I didn't answer truthfully. I answered what is going to get me this job. And ever since then, I've honestly answered every question in an interview, who I am. And walked out of that interview understanding, like, I'm okay if they don't pick me, because that means that they don't want a coach that is me, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Learning how to handle parents. Sultana's the same thing. A little bit of the Victor Boys program, I had to learn how to handle parents, because that's an aspect that I don't think we talk about enough in coaching. Like, you talked about X's and O's, and I look at Tom Dudgeon was a phenomenal mentor for me. But I look back, that kind of stuff, I didn't get a lot of mentoring. So I was kind of thrown into the fire with Sultana and the beginning of boys basketball at Victor High School, of how important it is to communicate with parents. Like, they're part of the process. Like, if you want these kids to improve, like, you do need to have an open communication with the parents. It doesn't mean the parents tell you what to do or control every situation, but you can't be afraid to have open and honest conversations with the parents. So,
yeah, you may have to say, we may have to agree to disagree, but I hope you understand where I'm coming from with this, you know, and using those phrases, whatever, you know. So, yeah.
I think when you do that, it just makes for a more authentic relationship between the coach and the parent. When you try to keep parents like you're not included, I just think more problems come from that.
What about, you know, you've kind of gone back and forth between the high school and the college situations, and it's the same, but as you well know, there's differences. So, you know, that same type of thing. What are some things that you learned that were that have been really good for you? as a coach to learn from going from the high school to the college, back and forth there a little bit, and some things that, I'm glad I went through that. It wasn't, it was not as positive as I would have liked, but I learned from it.
Obviously, JUCO, you're going to get a mixture of really talented kids that messed up in high school and they have to go JUCO, and kids that aren't the most talented, but they work really hard. Mm-hmm. And I believe every approach is a little different with a lot of those kids. At Victor College, we would recruit and get some kids that come from some tough backgrounds, and those type of kids, like, they weren't going to show you respect right away. Mm-hmm. You had to like kind of earn it and make it kind of like an open relationship where we're communicating back and forth, where the other kids that come from, like, that are going to work hard, those are the ones that are easy to coach. They're just going to do whatever you say. So it's just learning. It's also learning how to communicate in different ways with different players, mm-hmm. to get to the same result. So there's a lot of different approaches I would use. Like, there was a kid that we recruited from LA area. And I'm not saying this is right, but he couldn't get going unless I wasn't MFing him. But like, if I didn't use an X word, like, in the drill, I got the coach. But if I didn't, he'd just be like, lackadaisical. So I'd have to come around to him and be like, come on, you need to. So yeah, those type of things, like different approaches. I look back at that. That was probably me being young.
Yeah.
I try not to cuss anymore in my coaching, but coaching at the JUCO level, it's a little different.
Yeah.
This coach there understands what I mean when you're just happy when 10 or 11 players show up to practice, because sometimes you'll show up, then there's only eight. So coach at the JUCO level is a little different in California, because a lot of people naturally might not know. Can't offer any scholarships. There's no dorms and nothing. So getting them to practice is probably the hardest part of being a JUCO assistant, because Coach Desmond would be like, get in your car, go pick them up, and then I come back to practice and make sure that we have a full squad that can.
Well, did you at least get gas mileage for it?
Yes, Dungeon was nice to do that. I very drink that.
At least that was a positive out of it.
Yeah. I like the Civic, totally different atmosphere. It's Christian school. So obviously that approach I mentioned earlier, we didn't do. 4-year school, so there were dorms. So the issue of getting kids to practice wasn't. And honestly, it had like a Division III feel where,
sure,
you had kids that were highly skilled but not athletic, and would go through a wall for you and just wanted to get better. Mm-hmm. They pretty much, anytime you were there, they wanted to be in the gym. I mean, that's the 4-year level with players that get to that level. I think even at the Division III and AI D2, like, players that get to that level, they're just junkies. They want to be in the gym. They want to get better. So,
yep. The passion, the passion and the love for the game.
So I would say that's the biggest difference too from high school, because not every high school kid's like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So like, opening up the gym in the mornings for high school practices, maybe six players in the first couple of years. Like at Life Pacific, that the whole gym's full, because there's those guys want to get better and they want to move on. Some of them played in Mexico, that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. If you're not a committed assistant, because the head coach ain't doing that stuff, because you got other stuff you got to deal with. If you're not there, the players kind of turn on you. If you're not there to help them get better, they don't really respect you at the 4-year level. Mm-hmm.
Coaches, we're all here to hone our craft. And one of the great ways that you can help hone your craft is realizing that you need to be the CEO of your program. I really think I put that together for you. And here it is, in Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. I've got 365 different topics under 10 different content areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's, culture, game day operations, skill development, personal development, practice, off-season workouts, and miscellaneous coaching topics. So if you want to come in and you want to know how to implement the 2-3 zone defense or how to implement the triangle offense, it's going to be in there. If you want to know more about Don Meyer, it's in there. If you want to know more about building a great culture and the concepts and ideas that you should be looking at to building a great culture, it's in there. So Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, is a terrific tool for any coach to use at any stage of their career. On each page, there's probably about two-thirds of a page of writing, but on almost every single page of the book, it's got space to journal, to write out X's and O's, to put your thoughts down. It's 365 different concepts, but what it's asking you to do is to think about what you're going to do, how you're going to study this subject, and how you are going to make your program better. Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, will be out on Tuesday, September 16th. It will be available on Amazon.com for $26.99. It is going to be a terrific investment for you as a coach, as a human being. It's going to make your program better. Take 3 to 5 minutes every single day. Think about this concept. Think about what you're going to do and put those thoughts immediately down on paper. Think of it as a basketball coaching workbook, and that's exactly what this book is going to be. So coaches, look to pick up Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, on Tuesday, September 16th on Amazon.com. You, this recent job that you've just taken over at Riverside Prep, we talked a little bit about it at Snow Valley. It's a real positive move for you. But the downside of it is it's a really, really late change. And, you know, I think you told me, when I get back from Snow Valley, I'm going to meet my team for the first time, which is really, really, really late. No summer workouts, no team camps, nothing along those lines. So you've got a pretty short window to kind of get things amped up and ready to go for the season. What's the blueprint? What are you looking at doing? How are you going to, or what is your plan to get this team ready to go in a very short amount of time? And what words of advice do you have for other coaches that may be in that same situation?
Well, my situation is very, very unique in that this program that I'm taking over has had 5 coaches in 4 years.
Wow. You didn't tell me that.
But the good thing is it's a whole new, the superintendent, principal, they're on year 2. They're really trying to change the culture of that school to a sports centered school. I believe they're changing the name Riverside Prep Sports Academy in the coming years. So to answer your question, I think the number one thing me and my staff got to do, and what we've talked to them, is we have to get these kids to trust us, because them having 5 coaches in 4 years, in the back of their brain, they're thinking, well, this guy's going to be gone. So I think creating a kind of a sisterhood, a family environment really quick, where they're going to soon trust us and that we're going to be here for the long haul. But that, to me, in year 1 is the biggest thing I want to tackle. Yes, X's and O's is important. Yes, skill development's important. But year 1, I want to make sure that part is a check mark at the, that's the top of the list. And then it's just skill development. I think you seeing me, what I do at Snow Valley, and a lot of people that know me in California, is I'm a huge skill development person. And I believe that will help players become more confident because they will see that their game is improving. And honestly, I don't have a problem if parents are at line practice.
Why is that? That's interesting.
as long as they're not talking, like, I have some strict rules, but, like, I don't have a problem with a parent. And I know this is controversial with a lot of coaches, sitting on the side and watching what we do. I got nothing to hide.
Yeah.
So if the parent sees that we're doing skill development and all that, and they're getting better, I'm fine with it. I have nothing to hide. But again, to answer your question, I think number one is creating that trust. So having the communication circle is going to be really key this year that Coach Showalter does to get that family dynamic going. And then being authentic. Mm-hmm. Like, I got nothing to hide as a coach. I'll tell you where I've messed up in my life. I think when, especially coaching girls, if girls see that you're authentic, they'll go through a wall for you.
Yeah.
So
I would agree with you there. I would agree with you on that. Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but
no, it does. I want to go down this rabbit hole a little bit, allowing parents to practice. I see where that can be a positive thing. Obviously, the nightmare scenario is the parent that abuses the privilege. What I used to do is early in the season, usually it was the first Saturday of the season, we would have open practice for not just our parents, but for the entire community. If you wanted to come in and watch us practice, come in and watch us practice. And I coached the kids the same, whether their parents were there or not. I really didn't care in that regard. But that was one day as opposed to a standing open invitation. Take us down that rabbit hole, Coach. I mean, you've got me intrigued, Brandon.
This where I coach is a lot different, and Riverside Prep might be a different situation. So if we do this podcast in a year, I have a different question because it's a charter school, so it's parent choice. So those parents are usually more involved. At Victor, at the most, I had one or two parents, maybe a week, that would show up and watch.
Mm-hmm.
So it never was like an issue where they're too full. I just never wanted the parents thinking I was hiding stuff from them.
Sure.
When a parent's like, can I come watch practice? No, it's closed. Like, I just feel like, one, that parent's not going to have a really good open relationship of communicating with you. You kind of put the wall up.
Mm-hmm.
That's my logic is I don't ever want a parent thinking I'm hiding or trying to keep the phone.
Yep.
But I do go over the strict rules when we do the parent meeting. I go over these rules like, and my athletic director's there, and I go over like, this can lead to you not being allowed in practice.
Sure. I like that.
So you're coming up and you're talking to your daughter on the sideline while we're doing instruction. Like I'll go over all the expectations. So if the parent knows, like, I have no problem with you sitting on the side watching, and taking in a practice. But if you overstep these boundaries, there's a consequence, you know, and luckily for me, I haven't had to go that far to kick a parent out of practice.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of your influences here. Rapid fire, 30 seconds to a minute on each one of these, what I'm sure are fine gentlemen. Tom Dudgeon, and I think you referenced him a little bit earlier. Why's Tom make your list?
Probably one of the first coaches that believed in me. Saw something in me that I didn't see. Went to my parents and told them, he didn't have to do this, told them that I have a chance of being really good. Taught me a lot of life skills. Like, he was my head coach, like I said, at Granite Hills High School, and then he became my head coach at Victor Valley College.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a good dude that shaped me into the man I am today. Him and my dad are probably the two people that in my younger years, high school, that helped shape me to being the man I am.
Yep. Yep. Warren Ellis.
So me and him have a funny, I did not like him as my, he was my assistant coach under Tom Dudgeon.
Okay.
And at first I could not stand this guy. He was on me about every little detail.
Mm-hmm.
Until it started to click that this guy is probably one of the best teachers of the game I've ever seen. And again, you'll hear me say that about a lot of people, but he's a Snow Valley coach. But me and him butted heads my junior year in high school, where he even like kicked me out of the gym, and I'm going home and like I'm never playing for this guy again. And because I played with his son, Andrew Ellis, who's probably one of the better guards I've ever played with. I know you said quick, but so just a great teacher of the game, helped me, and honestly, a very godly man. Like back in the day, I didn't believe in the Lord. So he never gave up on me, and he would just always have that door open and never judge me for not believing in the Lord. And then eventually when I came around, like he was a huge support in getting me going in that direction of believing in the Lord and Jesus Christ.
Two Snow Valley, California guys, Charlie Sands and Wayne Carlson.
And one of the most authentic human beings you can meet. Another great teacher of the game. What I loved about him is I only saw him for 4 weeks out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I was a counselor. And then became a coach at Snow Valley, California. And he would reach out to me and check on me through an AOL email.
Yeah.
Cool. Back in the day. And he would just check on me. And it's funny because there's a lot of coaches that played for him. And they would say, oh, you're one of Sands' guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I was at that level with some of the players that played for him. But every time I went to Snow Valley, he made me feel like I was one of his Sand guys. And
yeah,
he mentored me, taught me a lot of, honestly, about how to not have as big of a temper. Like, Brandon, you got to calm down a little bit, you know? So just a great role model for me, and dearly miss him a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Wayne, yep.
Wayne Carlson was the Snow Valley basketball school counselor. Like, he oversaw the counselors. And he was a guy that, another great teacher like Charlie Sands, very calm demeanor, and took me under his wing and made me feel like I was one of his sons. We still communicate to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And just a person that I feel like cares deeply about me and checks in on me. And if I have a question, I can reach out to. And another awesome human being that has helped shape me into the person I am today.
Mm-hmm. Richard Fuji.
AKA my agent.
Okay. I'm surprised I didn't have to go through him to book you for the show.
I don't know if you heard the story. So the first time, what was it, 3 years ago, I was doing Coach Showalter's like, you're doing posts. And I was like, oh, no. So I come up with the vitamin drills that we do at Stone Valley. And Fuji comes to me and goes, this is really good. Don't give anybody this information until they talk to me, your agent. So that's why I call him my agent. But Fuji, he's a goofball.
Yeah.
Probably my best friend right now.
Mm-hmm.
Went from being a counselor at Snow Valley and him being a coach and us just forming a friendship that is the strongest of any friends I've ever had. And I think we obviously we love each other. We reach out for each other. We hold each other accountable. But another phenomenal teacher. He's kind of had a coaching career like me, where there's been a couple stops along the way where we both probably look back and go, hey, I could have done that better, or mm-hmm. that was a job I shouldn't have taken. So, but he's my best friend and someone I care deeply about, someone that's helped me out through a lot of tough times. in my coaching career. So,
yep. Obviously, a big influence on both of us is, you know, Snow Valley, and just you really gave and I've seen you do it before, but this year just hit me kind of differently. You talked about how Snow Valley, you know, changed your life, helped you develop as a person. It had not a whole lot to do with basketball. I mean, it was related to basketball, but it didn't. It wasn't just I'm chasing this scholarship. It kind of changed that, you know. And we, I really thought, you know, again, I think what was said in the coaches' clinic this year that remains sacred, and within the room, the four walls, that's where it stays. But just the camaraderie of the week this year just seemed like it was at another level. And I don't know if just our quote unquote generation of coaches that have been there a few years together now, there's a core group of, I don't know, 20 to 25 people that have kind of been there all together the last 5 or 6 years post COVID. I don't know what it is, but it just seemed like it was at another level this year. I don't know about you, but, you know, just talk about the camaraderie of coaching and you know, Snow Valley is part of that.
Like I talked, obviously I talked about Tom Dudgeon, Warren Ellis, Charlie Sands, Wayne, and Rich, about how much of an influence it's been on me. But Snow Valley Basketball School is, I mean, I think you're talking about the post speech. I broke down and got emotional.
Mm-hmm.
About how much it's affected me in a positive way. And, you know, Tom Dudgeon telling me you're going to the Snow Valley basketball camp. And my parents going, you're going. I didn't want to go. I had very low confidence in who I was. Like I told you earlier in this podcast, you know, a lot of people don't know this about me because I don't share it a lot, but I don't have a problem sharing it because I think it's something to talk about. Is I have a major learning disability. If you ask me to like read, I can't read above a fourth or fifth grade level. It's a very hard thing for me to do. So I never thought I was smart, like hated attention, social anxiety through the roof. Mm-hmm. And that's still stuff I still battle to this day. But when I went to Snow Valley Basketball School, I came in with all those qualities of walking with my head down, like trying to hide. I'm the 6'6" junior. Just don't look at me. I just want to get through it. And having coaches like Tim Digdon, Pete Gaskill, Ryan McAdams, I was at Iowa, just pour into me. And it's when you think about this, I'm only at this camp at that time. It was a 5-day camp.
Yeah.
Pouring into me like I'm going into their program.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just like basketball skills, like calling me aside and like letting me hear, like, you have a shot at being really good because you do this, this, and this, and just building this confidence to where by the end of the camp, I felt like $1 million.
I'm leaving 10 the feet camp.
I'm, yeah. I'm leaving the camp, and I came into it thinking I wasn't a good player. Who would ever want me to winning best post player of the camp, best rebounder, winning the cutthroat championship. And honestly, it's because of all the coaches that we talked about. Don Showalter's talk, like the coaches, you're talking about that camaraderie, and it's just a special place, and it's hard to explain. It's like telling someone, hey, the Grand Canyon's really big, but you can't really understand it until you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're in that room that we talked about and you feel the special parts of it. These coaches have reached out to me, and I only see them sometimes once or twice for a week at a camp. Originally it was California, now it's Iowa. And they're reaching out to me like, are you okay? how are you doing? And it's authentic because they want to make sure that everyone's doing okay. It's a brother and a sisterhood that has a bond that is so hard to explain, but it's so special. Some people, like, I love the saying for Iowa, it's the court of dreams.
Yes.
And then, like Locke says, we're the last of the Cowboys. And there's a lot of, in our industry of coaching, I don't know many camps or places or even leagues. Like, when you're a coach in high school and you go to league, like, league teams don't even help each other in that
type of aspect. In that same way, yeah, the humanity.
It's just a special place. And I've had emails from like five post players from that speech saying how powerful it was and how Snow Valley's made them feel better. So it just shows to what Don Showalter and hiring the best coaches possible to run that camp. It's just, again, it's just a special place in my heart. And I'm lucky that my wife lets me go for 2 weeks a year. So,
coaches, it's getting to be that time of year again. It is time once again for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Fall 2025 Coaches Clinics. We've got a great lineup of coaches ready for you to come in and learn from here in the Omaha metro area. If you are a high school or college coach within a 30-mile radius of Omaha, you should be signing up for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Clinics, everything that the program has to offer. Here's what we've got. September 17th, Wednesday, September 17th, we got Brian Cooley, the University of Minnesota men's assistant coach. He is going to do both sessions that evening. On September 24th, my childhood friend, my lifelong friend, Dick Jungers, the head girls basketball coach at Newell Fonda from Iowa, he's going to come down for an hour. And then the second hour, we're going to have Alan Huss, Creighton men's associate head coach, the man in waiting, the guy that is going to take over for Coach McDermott whenever Coach Mack decides to hang up the whistle. He's going to come in and give us some great knowledge. October the 1st, Krugs, my guy Krugs, my good friend Mark Kruger, head girls basketball coach at Miller West High School here in Omaha. He's going to be there for the first hour. And then Nate Linzer, assistant men's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska. Great guy. Took care of my son for 3 or 4 years down in Nebraska with Coach Hoiberg. Coach Linzer is going to come in and give us some great knowledge that evening. And then our last Wednesday, October the 8th, we're actually going to be on the floor with Jamie Carey, who is the new women's basketball head coach at Omaha here. She's going to do an on-court demonstration at Brownell Talbot High School here in Omaha. She is really starting to hit the local circuit hard. She is recruiting kids from the area, and she wants to get involved with the Nebraska and Omaha, especially Omaha area coaches. So coaches, come out and check her out. Doors are going to open at 6 each week. Happy hours from 6 to 7. We're going to have wings. We're going to have beverages. Speakers start at 7 o'clock. We're going to have door prizes. The first 3 weeks, September 17th, 24th, and October the 1st, it's going to be at Legends Sports Bar at 69th and Pacific here in Omaha. Like I said, on October the 8th, the last evening is going to be Brownell Talbot, just off of about 55th and Dodge in that area there, Memorial Park area. If you would like to register, here's the great thing. Tom Crable, our president, has got a great thing set up for you now. If you register before September the 1st, you're going to get an early bird special of $75 per coach. So that's less than 10 bucks an hour to come in and get great knowledge with great networking opportunities and socialization and getting to know your fellow coaches in the area. $75 a coach if you pay before September 1st. After September 1st, it's going to be $90 per coach on your staff. So it's a great opportunity for not only for you to grow, but for your staff to grow. If you would like to register, when you decide to register, send your registration and fees to Ralston High School. Attention, Mr. Tom Crable, K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L, 8969 Park Drive, Ralston, Nebraska, 68127. If you're making out a check, make it out to MBCA or Metro Basketball Coaches Association. Coaches, again, if you're within a 30-mile radius of Omaha, you should be signing up for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Fall Coaches Clinics. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound, Brandon?
Sounds great.
All right, let's dive into it here. The Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Henderson, let's get after it. The John Wooden quote of the day is from page 117 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. It is, there are coaches out there who have won championships with a dictator approach, like a Bobby Knight or a Vince Lombardi. I had a different philosophy. I didn't want to be a dictator to my players or assistant coaches or managers. For me, concern, compassion, and consideration were always priorities of the highest order.
I don't know if you saw there's a video that kind of got posted on Twitter, and I just really loved it. And it was about Pete Carroll talking in front of, it looks like a college class. Like,
yeah, I saw that. Yep.
And a kid asked him that, pretty much, honestly, the question was kind of like that quote. Like, there's so many different ways to win. And what I hear John Wooden saying is, he believes that a player-led program is better than a coach-led program. Mm-hmm. And the reasons why is what Pete Carroll goes into is, like, if you're a dictator philosophy as a coach, like, yes, it's possible to win that way. But you're creating kids that aren't going to make decisions on their own.
Yeah.
And I think in the older way of how basketball was played, where it was a lot slower paced, more rigid, that philosophy of coaching would work better in that, where now it's up and down, it's more read and react, and kids have to make a decision. And if you can teach them principles and make it player led, where players are going to like monitor themselves and keep themselves accountable, they're going to go way farther than that team that is coached by a do it my way, you're not allowed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously players come into account. We all know that, what team has better players, but I just think player led teams are more successful in games, and honestly, you're preparing them to be good husband, wife, how to handle life. So that's how I take that quote.
Yeah. Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's a much harder game to micromanage today than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, the Normandale, we're going to make four passes before we shoot type of a thing. And I don't, please don't think I'm speaking blasphemy on perhaps the greatest coach of cinema history. But I really think that, you know, when you just dictate everything and you try, and probably when I was a younger coach, that's something that I tried to do. But as I became more seasoned, as I became more seasoned and experienced, what I realized was you've got to let the kids play. You've got to let them figure it out. And you've got to, because that's the way you're going to be most successful for the long run. You can be really dictatorial and, you know, kind of be successful in the regular season or whatever, but ultimately players are going to win championships and you've got to let players make plays. And if you try to control everything that the players are doing, you're not going to reach the ultimate goal, in my opinion. That's just me.
I agree with you. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's dive into it. This is, folks, get ready here, especially if you are a coach with a really good post player. Coach Henderson does a magnificent job. And I got to go through his agent here to get all of this information. But maybe he'll let us privy to it a little bit without having to pay a fee or anything. I'll send Coach Fuji some Archies or something like that.
You know what? Archies, so. I'll pay the fee today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. I appreciate it, man. So talk to us about post players, man. And I'm going to try and do my best to shut up. You know how it goes at this point, Coach. I'm going to try and shut up and listen. If I feel the need to interject, I will try to do so as politely as possible. But talk to us about teaching post players and the fundamentals of post work in the scoring zone. Just let it rip, my friend.
There's the forgotten art of basketball, to be honest. I think people teach post moves backwards. I've had people come up to me and say the way I teach post moves is very different. Most of the time when I first got taught how to do post moves, it was catch the ball on the block. We're going to teach all these post moves. Not that that's a bad approach, but I would do this, and then I'd see the kids always like breaking the finish, and I just finally was like, why don't I teach the finish first? Mm-hmm. Like where you end up in your post move, so that when you get there, you're able to finish. So that's where I kind of start with. Obviously, Mikan's a great drill. I do this dribble hop finishes, dribble hop step throughs, dribble hop reverse pivot finishes. And then luckily for me, when I was at LPU, we went to play UC Irvine, who, if you want to know how to use big man, watch UC Irvine. Uh-huh. Russell Turner is probably one of the best coaches on teaching bigs that I've seen. And I'm just watching them do their warm-up. And I just, obviously, us as coaches, you steal. You see something that's good, I'm like, I like that. I'm going to steal it. But created a drill, or I took a drill called, and I call it the Irvine, where it's just honestly catching the ball right in front of the rim, and you're working on your jump hooks, and then your up and unders, and then your reverse pivot finishes. And by doing all these drills, kids don't even know it. They're doing footwork.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes natural to them. So now, after doing all those drills, which are very simple warm-ups, and I don't have a problem sharing it with anybody. You can just reach out to me on Twitter or I'll share my email. But now you teach the post moves, which I'm more of a rip the basket face-up now.
Yeah, kind of Sigma.
Yeah, not that the drop step's gone and forgotten. I just think with the way post players are now, it's more of that type of style of game. And honestly, when I went to the 4-year level at the NAIA JC, that was kind of the post players I had. It was more of an athletic. It wasn't a so-called like Shaq style where we're on chalkboards that we're going to like pound it down, drop step and finishes. So that, from a post standpoint, I think everybody's got to re-teach how they're doing it. Because a lot of places I'll go watch and they don't know that I'm watching them teach post moves. And they're having them catch on the block and they're just teaching them, you're going to dribble middle, jump hook. For middle, jump hook. And to me, it's backwards. You should be teaching the finish first. Once they have the finish, whether they feel comfortable, then you can teach them the post moves. And I think they'll be more successful at it because when they finish their post move, they're in an area where, oh, I've drilled this a lot. Mm-hmm. Now I know how to react. And then, like any good position coach, you got to let them play live. And I've created some drills where, yeah, we're finished in the key, but we need to have a live situation. So yeah. I know you shared that one that I did at Snow where the two post players are shoulder to shoulder and the coach can throw it to them. Yep. And they have no dribble. Yep. So they got to pivot. And if the defender comes up and to block them, now they're going to step through, finish with their other hand. And it's just more game-like because I think it's still development. Give them some pointers on some moves and then get them into a live situation. And I used to not be like that, honestly, until I met Twig.
Oh, Twig. Yep. Yeah. Transforming basketball and that type of stuff. Yep.
Because he's huge on, he thinks he couldn't do anything without a defender. And I'm not that extreme. But I've incorporated defense way more now talking to him because it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And drills with LeBron. So.
Well, it's that growth mindset that you need to have. You don't have all the answers. You've got to seek out different things. I I got Alex Sarama's book. I had, you know, shameless plug. Alex was on a two-part pod, and I challenged his theories, and we still don't agree on everything, but I see his way of thinking more so. And I think a lot of coaches do that stuff with Transforming Basketball. And I think there's a ton of good resources that Transforming has, with Alex, with Twig, those folks there. And, but like you said, I still have kind of that old school approach is we still need to do some one on zero, still work on, hey, let me have confidence in the finish before I put a defender on me and then try to finish. Cause I think regardless of what happens, when you see the ball go through the basket, whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing to do before it went into the basket, at least it went into the basket. And that's the ultimate success that we're looking for. And when you're working with skill breakdown, you can do all this stuff out there, but if you don't finish it at the end, then it doesn't do you any good.
No. Like, honestly, right now, I saw a video of, and I'm not, these coaches are way better than me, but I'm watching Angel Reese do post moves.
Yep.
And he's bricking every finish.
Yep.
And I'm like, why are we at the post move spot? Like, her issue is finishing. Like, why are we not going to that spot that she's struggling at and working on that exact spot? And I'm sure they do that, but just like stuff like that that I watch. Also, I think coaches that, like, I look at my younger self, I didn't do the drills that we're talking about because I wanted to hear myself talk and like teach you all these cool moves and look cool.
Yeah.
You know, and the older you get, you're like, it's not about me. It's about the player. What do I need to do to make this player better? If it's sitting and doing the Irvine drill for 10 shots on his and working on just the form of right hand hook, like, then I'll do that. Yeah. It doesn't look fancy. It doesn't look cool, but
I think that benefits the player way more.
Yeah.
In the long run.
Well, and I think whether you're talking to your team or you're working on skill development breakdowns one-on-one or in a team practice, I think one of the greatest mistakes that we make as coaches is talking too much. Let's rep and get out of the way. And I think, you know, we're talking individual development with post players here, but that's a universal mistake that a ton of coaches make. You know, get in, make your point, get out, let them figure it out. And that's where that Transforming Basketball thought process comes from, doesn't it, Brandon?
Yeah, exactly. I forget who told me. It might have been Locke, or it might have even been Showalter, but it was like, don't talk in paragraphs, talk in tweets.
Yep.
And that really stuck to me because I used to be a paragraph guy. Oh, I'll talk a long time so you know I'm smart. Like, the kid, honestly, the kids today, they don't care. Tell me what I need to do. Get me back in the drill.
Yep. Yep.
So,
yeah, Rick Pitino calls it 7-second corrections. Kevin Eastman says, you know, coaching bullet points. You know, it's all the same way. It's a bunch of different titles of saying the same thing. And that, you know, get them back out there and let's rep it, let's rep it, let's rep it. Yep. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. As players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deal, and branding creation, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come as a rite of passage to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort east of Los Angeles before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, this camp was a rite of passage for the game's greatest coaches throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum and brought the camp to Waverly, Iowa in 1994 at Wartburg College, where it will celebrate its 30th anniversary in 2025. This is the story of America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. It's the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, is available on Amazon.com right now for $17.99. Order your copy today. Let's talk baseline out-of-bounds plays, Coacher. What are some things that you like to do with your baseline out-of-bounds plays? But you know, if you want to talk both sides of the ball, let's talk both sides of the ball here. But let's talk baseline out-of-bounds plays and what you want to do there. What do we hope to see at Riverside Prep here in a few months?
Well, my favorite out-of-bounds play is from Biola University, which is a Southern California school in California. When I was at Vanguard University playing, I remember us going through scout team, and I was like, this out-of-bounds play is ridiculous. And all it is you pretty much take the square out-of-bounds play that's under, like, in the on the key, and you just move it over to the side. And it's, for some reason,
strong side
coaches, yeah, just struggle when you just do that. And then you have your shooter on the block, you have your big on the wing, you have your point guard at the elbow, strong side elbow, and then you have your four man in the corner. And it works great versus zone or man. And you just have your shooter set back screen on the five, comes off of it. The point guard pops straight back as a release. And then the four man that's in the corner is reading what the defender is doing with the shooter that's at the back screen on the defender with the five. And your shooter goes straight to the strong side corner. And that's one of my favorite plays. But a lot of teams, they'll switch, and then you get the slip out of the four-man setting the screen on the shooter, and you get a layup. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
I mean, it doesn't work every time, but I've never had a problem getting the ball in, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So, defensively, I love to zone defense. I kind of have like a what's the word? So like it's like a 1-3-1 alignment out of a zone out of, to a baseline out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So that you look at a lot of out of balance plays. I had a coach tell me at Silver Lake Conference, he's like, have you ever tracked where most of the players go in out of balance play? And I'm like, no. And he's like, they go strong side block, opposite block, elbow, and corner. And he's like, I came up with this 1-3-1 alignment, and the guys are already in that in those areas. So he's like, you'd be shocked how many times the players just come to where the defense is.
Hey, I'm waiting for you.
Yeah. And it'd be easier for scouting. So I've adopted that. I think out of bounds plays, like I got Biola, like I said, it's my favorite play. I call it a lot because there's a lot of options out of it. I think out of bounds plays, you should have multiple options out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand the coaches that have like 15 out of bounds plays. That just ain't me.
Yeah.
I think that's a little too much.
But yeah.
I don't have the facilities or the time as a coach to put that many out of bounds plays in. I know when I played for our coach at LPU, Tim Cook, he was a guy that had a lot of out of bounds plays. So I think how much time you have in practice probably dictates how many out of bounds plays you in. But I probably use two man ones and two zone ones, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that about. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that 1-3-1, and you're not the first person that's thrown that 1-3-1 on an out of bounds play at me. Like, and if I were to get back into it, that's something I would definitely consider doing. You know, I know one thing we really emphasized to our teams when it came to out of bounds plays was if there's a screen and the inbounder throws it to the strong side corner, there's going to be a rescreen for the shooter somewhere along the way. Yeah. It, that's 90% of the time when that happens, that's what they're looking to do. That's what they're setting up. So we would immediately say, hey, when it goes, that was one of the things we taught was, if you see that ball go to the strong side corner, 90% of the time, that's going to be a rescreen for the inbounder. That's what we're going to take away first. And if you can figure that out, then, you know, what the heck, you know, figure it out. But that's something that we preached as well. But I'm intrigued by that 1-3-1 lineup, though.
Yeah, at first I was like kind of, it was literally at Snow Valley Basketball School in California. My roommate, Ramsey, he was the assistant at Fairfax High School. I don't know if you know that, but they're like a powerhouse in the past. Like them in Westchester and California, a lot of state titles. And he was just going over how to guard out of bounds plays. And that's what I did. And I was young and I was like, I just zone and trap the corner. And he was like, and went over the 1-3-1. And I thought it was great. And that's another example of why Snow Valley Basketball School is pretty cool, because it's probably the best coaching clinic in the world. You just have so many coaches that you can just pick their brain, and no one has egos. Everybody's willing to share. It's pretty cool.
Yep. Let's wrap up on this, Coach. Let's talk about assistant coaches, building up your assistant coaches, giving them responsibilities, delegating authority, giving them the opportunity to invest in the program the same way that the head coach does. You know, where does that come from? What are some things that you do to try and elevate the performance level of your assistant coaches?
I think first you got to obviously meet with them and find out what they like.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that they're going to get those things. But I think earlier in my career, when I worked for Coach Dudgeon, who, again, I loved working for him, but a lot of times in my first year, I was just on the sideline, had no say. It was a little slow coaching wise for me, but that's kind of what you got to do early in your career. But me remembering that, and again, I'm at a high school level. I've only been a head coach at a high school level, so never had the opportunity to be at a 4-year where you probably can act like he did. But I think finding out what they're interested in, and then trying to find out spots in the practice that they can have their voice be heard. Because
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to be an assistant, and I struggle at it too. My assistants have to say, like, hey, you've ran the whole practice, like, they haven't heard my voice much. Like, you've got to find parts where you make them do it, because sometimes assistants are hesitant to jump in and have their voices be heard if you're running the drill. So I think having weekly meetings to go over stuff that you like that you're seeing, what you don't like. And then I have rules for all my assistants. Like, you're in charge of the defense when we're scrimmaging. You're in charge of the offense when we're scrimmaging. Obviously, I oversee the whole the picture, but that's what you're correcting. So yeah. They need to hear your voice in that. And then find out what their goals are. Their goal is to be a head coach. What's the problem with bringing in a first, second year person in the program and going, hey, you want to know what the head coach deals with? Here we go. Come over here.
Mm-hmm.
The AD just told me we got a game on Friday, and the AD just told me we don't have the gym Wednesday and Thursday. What are we going to do? And that's the stuff that I don't think head coaches talk to their assistants enough about. Like,
yeah,
it's easy to talk about X's and O's, and yes, you got to have a foundation of that. Yes, that's important. There's the aspect of getting the team to go in one direction. But the life of a head coach, like someone put it to me really well, it's like, you're the CEO. A lot of times the CEO is not in the dirt doing everything. You got to have your assistants in the trenches doing your vision. And I just don't think you can have that approach if you do everything and then the assistants are just on the side. And then when you need them to step up because you walk out of practice, they're shocked because they have never had to have an opportunity to run a thing.
Yeah.
And they struggle. Like, it's funny. A coach that I teach with, he was kind of mentioned this to me this week about he coaches at a place where the head coach does everything. And then he went and ran a club practice, and he's like, dude, I forgot my voice because they weren't using it. And I think as a head coach, you got to make sure that you value your assistants. And honestly, I will never disrespect my assistants in front of the players.
Yeah.
If I have to do a correction, I'll do it after practice. Like maybe a water break. We'll go off to the side and talk. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand the coaches that'll belittle an assistant coach in front of the players and then expect the players to respect that person. So
yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. You know, you're talking about that responsibility for assistants. One of the things I would often do, and it would be on my practice plan, you know, Michael, you've got this, Chris, you got this, or whatever. But I would reiterate it to the team. All right, hey, Ginger, you're watching everything on the ball. I'm watching on defense. I'm watching everything off the ball on defense. Michael, you've got, you know, on-ball movement and on-ball fundamentals here in this five. You know, let's say we're going 5-on-5. Coach Eastman, you've got all the off-ball movement. I just want you watching off-ball offensive movement. And if a player had a question, hey, am I supposed to screen here? And who are they going to come to naturally first, Brandon? They're going to come to the head coach, right? No. Coach Eastman was watching that. I don't know. I wasn't watching that. You talked to Coach Eastman. And I would do things like that to try and give my assistant coaches voices in practice. And not only, and part of that was, hey, this is on you. And if we're not defending the ball well enough, Ginger, you gotta talk to them better. You know, you've got to teach that better, you know. And if they screw up on off-ball defense, I'm getting on myself, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. And everybody had the freedom. Now, it was explained that we're not going to blow the whistle every 4 seconds, all right? But if you need to blow the whistle to correct something, you've got the freedom to blow the whistle. Let's get it figured out so that we can be as good as we can be. And I think when you start doing those things in practice, it's going to make your whole team better. It's going to make your coaches better coaches. They're going to be more invested in the team because they're going to feel like they literally have a voice with what's going on, and they want to have that responsibility.
Well, it comes back to what we talked about earlier, player-led program. Well, your staff, too, is like that. Like, if you're a dictator to your staff, well, then they're not thinking for themselves either.
Mm-hmm.
So like doing what you said, like empowering your assistant coaches, you're responsible for this. I'm going to hold you accountable for this, but though, like, I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And guiding them, that's the key word, guide them to be successful. So your staff is just like your team. I don't think a lot of coaches look at it that way. They look at their staff like some coaches are a dictator even to their staff. Like, no, I it's just not my style. I believe in empowering people, and I think you get more from it. I just do, because as a head coach in a game, you're watching the game, and the last 2 years have been the greatest games for me. I finally listened to friends of mine, Rich Fuji. They're like, why are you doing subbing? Give it to your assistants. Watch the game, make an adjustment. And it was so hard for me to relieve that control, because there was a like me being like, no, sure. I can't trust that they're gonna put the wrong person in. And like, I remember Fuji and a bunch of people were like, dude, you'd be shocked. Just give them a guide of what type of subbing you want. And I guarantee you it'll go well. And the last 2 years, it's been phenomenal for me. And I think I've been a better game coach because I'm not worrying about subs. I'm watching the game. I get to make adjustments. And
yep.
I think the older you get, you learn, like, as a head coach, like, I don't have to do everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that seasoned and experienced state that we're in.
It's not being lazy. Like, I look at when I was at Sultana, and I was trying to do everything, running like all these crazy sets and just putting 100 things in, not using my assistants. And then I'd always tell my assistants when we lost to a team that did really simple stuff, but they don't really do anything. They're just doing this, this, and this. And I'm like, now I'm at the age I'm like, well, yeah, they're really smart. They're really good at these five things where I'm trying to do 20.
Yeah. Well, you know, you are correct there. Shameless plug. You, of course, mentioned, you know, basically you feel like a CEO of your program. Hopefully in the next 6 weeks or so, Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, will help you with all of these issues that Coach Henderson and I have just talked about the last few minutes to help you alleviate those issues. And you don't have to make the same mistakes that we've made. Right, Brandon?
Yes, sir.
There you have it. So Brandon Henderson, new head girls basketball coach, Riverside Prep out of California. Coach, if folks want to know more about you, more about your program, what you're doing, if they got questions for you, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at Twitter, CoachHen33. I'm on Instagram. My girls basketball program's Twitter is Riverside Girls B. So that's how I can be reached. Or if you want to email me, I'm coachhenderson33@gmail.com. A lot of people helped mentor me growing up. So if any of you hear this podcast and maybe you're going through a situation that you feel like hearing this, that was like Sultana or early in my career at Victor Valley High School, and you want to know how I can help with that, I have no problem emailing or sharing my phone number. I think what's great about the basketball community is helping others. Mm-hmm. So,
yep, here to help.
And that's what we're doing here tonight, and you did a great job of it this evening, my friend. Hope you enjoyed your first spin on a pen and a napkin, Coach.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. And thank you for asking me to come on. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. Not a problem at all. Why don't you hold the line here? Going to wrap up here with Cosette Chiropractic, our founding sponsor. Again, if you're in the Omaha area, you need chiropractic services, don't hesitate to check in with Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Follow us on Twitter. Download, rate, review, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. It has been a terrific evening talking hoops with Brandon Henderson, new head girls basketball coach at Riverside Prep. Just great stuff here. A lot of really good things, and he's got a terrific story to share with a lot of different people. So really appreciate his time this evening. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.